7:45, meeting of the Planning and Development Committee. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. I believe Mr. Chapman has...
I have one update, but obviously need a motion to approve before we get an amendment. So I'll move to approve minutes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
And now I would offer an amendment simply to say that in the minutes, there is an item which says that the commission recommended sending something back to the commission. It should be the committee, which is us, moved to send it back to the commission.
Mr. Chapman, can you tell me what page that's on?
Page 4, I'm sorry.
That's okay, thank you. All right, do we have a second on his motion to amend?
Second.
All right, let's vote on the amendment. Motion to approve the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion to amend carries, and now we're back to the motion to approve the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 3 on the agenda is public comment. You have 2 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record. If you would like to speak, please come up to the podium.
A little handout for you all. I do my best. I hope you like this. I did print out in color, I apologize.
Oh, no.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, and I hope you all had a terrific 4th of July. I'm Chris Coleman, 118 Pitt Street. During the last session of the Planning Committee, I was left with the impression that many of you believed that the nonconformities ordinance still requires somebody who gets this letter of adequate compliance to get a variance. That is not the administrator's interpretation, and that's very clear from their write-up. I want to illustrate to you what happens in that circumstance. Your diagram has two very similar properties. One is Bob's Barbers. Bob's Barbers happens to be a nonconforming property to begin with, and it wants to expand to be a pizza parlor. Okay, so Bob goes to 6,000 square feet, has neighbors right behind him. Alice, just down the street on Coleman Boulevard, is much smaller operation. It's an auto parts place, and it wants to convert to a pizza parlor, too. It happens that Alice is a conforming property. So let's see what happens. The last page explains to you what happens under the ordinance. Bob is allowed to build along the line of setback, because he invaded the setback years ago, so he can expand his building 6,000 square feet. Because he was also parking nonconforming in 1978, he also gets to write a letter, email off to the town office saying, gee, I'd like to be able to park 60 cars here. Well, can't, administrator can send him an email back that says, oh, okay, you get to expand. Congratulations, adequate for you to have 8 parking spots. And nobody in that neighborhood hears about it. There's no notice, there's nothing that you see. So Alice, who is conforming all along, Alice has to go before the Board of Zoning Appeals. They're wonderful people, but she has to go through a big test here. She has to show hardship, and in particular, she has to show that she's not going to harm people in her neighborhood. Take a look at it, that's how it works.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here for public comment?
My name is Robert Hervey, H-E-R-V-E-Y, 1605 William Hapton Way, and I'm the Executive Director of East Cooper Habitat for Humanity, and I'd be happy to answer any questions later on if you had any concerning the item Habitat has for you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Edward Jefferson. I live at 1145 McKnight Road, Mount Pleasant. I'm here today to find out a little more about this area-wide business that they want to come in and do on that near McKnight Road, just to get some more understanding on what's happening. So anybody can explain to me what's kind of business going to be coming up there, or what it's all about?
So this is public comment time. This is for we don't answer questions during public comment time.
Okay, well, area-wide business include more business off of McKnight Road, or? Anyone know? Maybe.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your...
Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. I'm just trying to understand this area-wide business district. Approved 1 point. Acre tract, various near McKnight Road, the corner of McKnight Road. Just trying to get understanding on what kind of business is coming off of McKnight Road, or us on McKnight Road, or so 17.
I'm going to make sure I hear you. You say McKnight Road?
Yes, sir.
Then you want to know what kind of business is going to be?
Yes, sir. Call them McKnight.
I think when we get to that item on the agenda, then our administrator will go into great detail. As of right now, I don't know.
Okay.
And I doubt any of the other council members know. So if you can, you'll hear the answer to that question when we get to the item on the agenda.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Yes.
George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road, Director of Community Activity for CAGE. I'm really here today to bring to your attention the fact that in the Sweetgrass Basket over there, we decided years ago that if any businesses were built in this area, that it would be a certain distance away from the highway. And I believe when we did it, the highway was only four lanes. It's six lanes now. So we have a situation now. Has that 500 feet shifted, or does it get reduced to a lesser distance? That's one concern. The other concern is this: the developers requesting an area-wide business. That's not something that's allowed in this area. So we would have expected that the developer would have at least contacted CAGE or the community to discuss what they're getting to do in the area, because we don't want to come out and just say we're against it and stop them completely, because it's not something that's allowed. But at least they would give the community an opportunity to hear what's going to be planned there, because this sounds to be a small piece of that's being zoned to area-wide business. But is this a precursor to a much larger that's going to come in the future? Because like I said, area-wide business is not something was designated for this area. This area was designated for more for businesses like office professionals. Now, the community has allowed area-wide business in certain areas in the past, but the developer had met with the community. This developer has not met with the community or CAGE. So our thing is that we would like an opportunity to meet and to discuss this distance as to which one counts. Although with the 1 acre, it might not matter. I can't remember how to work out the feet, but I believe it was 500 feet with the four-lane highway, but now we have six lanes. So did that 500 shift, or does it become 400 something now? That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment?
Good morning. Pat Sullivan, 1002 Plantation Court. One of the most popular items in the current Mount Pleasant comprehensive plan is to protect the integrity of the settlement communities by limiting further encroachment and deterioration of the original development patterns and ensuring any redevelopment is as compatible as possible with community standards. Well, how are we doing on this? This is a 1875 plat of Phillips, so you can see how far back this community was planned. This is around, it's in the 1950s, and it shows Phillips basically, it's the same circumference everything is the same in the middle, but just, I want you to note all the trees around there, which means Phillips is remaining the same, and outside is just trees. Now, today, there's Phillips in the middle in green, and it's the same shape. All the rows are the same, but you'll notice a difference in looking at the surroundings. I call them little daisy chains, and that is development. And Phillips has managed to keep the development, keep those little daisy chains out of their settlement community. Charleston County zoning Phillips is S3, which is three houses per 14,500 square foot minimum, and Phillips is happening that. Okay. Now developer wants to put in 19 acres of Phillips and zone them.
Your time is up.
Okay, Dunes West PD zoning 10,000 square foot minimum. This is more homes than Phillips can handle.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment? All right, moving on to item 4, old business.
Hold on, I'm going to wait for the presentation to come back up. So if you'll recall, this 4A and 4B both first came to you back in February. This first request was to annex an approximately 9-acre tract of land. As you can see here, it's the really small green stars up there, but the two parcels, like I said, it's two parcels totaling about 9.05 acres. Our comprehensive plan does call for settlement community land uses. And right now the properties are vacant, but the applicant is requesting to annex those two properties and bring them into the Dunes West PD, which is actually part of the Covington Phase 1 and 2. And this map's a little bit older, but you can see all the gray area is the Dunes West plan development. So the intent is to bring these parcels in and zone them into the Dunes West plan development. And that's all I have for the annexation. If you have any questions, and I can go forward with the amendment, or if you want to go ahead and hear them separately.
Why don't we hear them separately?
Okay.
Committee, do we have any questions on the annexation component? Do we have a motion?
I would move to deny the request.
We have a motion to deny. Do we have a second?
Second.
Do we have any discussion on this? Ms. Hyatt?
I'm not sure I have as much of a problem as annexing as I do changing the zoning.
That is kind of where I am as well. Like, I feel comfortable with the annexation, but zoning it into the PD does not seem like something that is in line with our plans for for this area.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a motion on the table. We have a second. All those in favor, is there any further discussion? All right, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? No.
No.
No. So Ms. Hyatt is a tie, yeah. Yeah. So, and the next item on the agenda is the Dunes West PD amendment to include this. So our recommendation to council is we basically have a tie to item B.
So, this is an amendment to a proposed amendment to the Dunes West plan development. As I mentioned, it is the two properties comprised of 9 acres. The Planning Commission did recommend denial unanimously for this request. So it does pertain to the area known as Covington, which is a it's part of the Dunes West PD, but when Covington Phase 1 and 2 came in, they requested a little bit different zoning. They wanted to be zoned, designated within the PD as Dunes West R3, and utilize those setbacks, but they wanted the Dunes West R1 lot sizes. So larger lot sizes and smaller setbacks is basically what it was. So in 2018, the portions of Phase 1 and 2 came in. There were 33 lots. Now proposed is Phase 3, and you'll see later under new business there's a request for a third parcel. So in total, right now is two parcels to be Phase 3. There's proposed later under new business to be a third parcel. All three would be proposed Phase 3. So the applicant is proposing similar to Phases 1 and 2. It would be brought into the PD. They would be designated as Dunes West R3. They would utilize those R3 setbacks, which is 15 front and rear, 10 on the side, but they would utilize the R1 lot area and lot coverage, as you can see below. There was an ordinance amendment back in 2019 to reduce the number of units. So it is important to note that right now, the maximum achievable that they could probably get there, given the acreage and everything, would be about 27, 29 units. But based on that 2019 amendment, there are only 25 remaining units left under the R3 designation. And this proposed amendment does not include an increase in density or units, and so that's certainly important to note. The comprehensive plan, as I mentioned earlier, does call for settlement community land uses. The Dunes West R1 and R3 are really not consistent with this. It more appropriately, it would come in as community conservation zoning. As I mentioned, there is no increase to the density, and the maximum under settlement community would be 3 units an acre. And then if the amendment were approved and these came in, they would have to go through the sketch plan process and meet all of those requirements. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Do you have a question? If they remain in the county, what can they do with this property as far as density?
If they remain in the county, I think they're S3, Special Management 3 District, which is, it's basically similar to our community conservation. Okay. So it's very much the same as far as density and lot sizes and things like that. So
that was my question.
Perfect. Mr. Chapman?
I'll move to deny the request.
Second. We have a motion and we have a second to deny the request. Is there any further discussion on this? No. All right. I think this should be community conservation zoning, and this is a case where they have no land left to build what's left in their PD, so they're trying to annex in land in order to access more properties. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Moving on to number 5A.
Okay, we have a number of annexations. A few of them are going to be, they're split up by number, but they are contiguous, and they actually signed an annexation covidavit. So they, now that they are contiguous, they are required to come in. So the first one on that list is this property.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move to approve items 5A, 5B, and 5D is in Delta. These are three parcels right next to each other, and that's a good start for Snowden.
Second. We have a motion to approve in a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. So items A, B, and D, recommendation is to annex. We're on to item C.
Okay, 5C is also an annexation. It's at 1224 Venning Road. It's 0.45 acres. It is also recommended for settlement community land uses, as you can see from the comprehensive plan. And it is contiguous across Venning Road, and it will come in as community conservation.
I have a question about this property, and I think I see. Is it contiguous by being across the street from Venning?
Yes, sir.
So that's where the contiguity is,
yes.
Not anything on the other side of Venning.
That's correct.
Okay. I'll move for approval.
Second.
For discussion.
And we have a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, moving on to item E, 3804 Garden Hill Road.
Move to deny.
We have a motion to deny. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion to deny and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any against? I say no. So we have a motion to deny, and that's 3-1. Item number 6, review of Planning Commission recommendations from the June meeting. Item A is rezoning from OP to AB.
Okay. So this went to the Planning Commission in June. It is a request to rezone from office professional to area-wide business. It's a one-acre tract located on the corner of McKnight Road and Highway 17, as you can see here. It is in the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District, and there is no request to remove it from that overlay. So the request before you is only to change the underlying zoning. You can see here across McKnight, we have some area-wide business, and then across Highway 17, there's a mix of OP and AB. The comprehensive plan does call for settlement community land uses. So, as I mentioned, the property is on that corner. It's OP. It is to remain in the overlay district. Within the overlay district, it's within the village commercial area, which is has certain requirements in and of itself within the Sweetgrass Basket overlay. It's intended to allow low-intensity commercial uses, and it is to there's also access management. It tries to limit access off of Highway 17, use secondary roads for interconnectivity. And then it also speaks to that village commercial area pertains to 500 feet of commercial frontage along Highway 17. So regardless of whether it's AB or OP, it's going to be held to those requirements and that Sweetgrass Basket overlay, those extra limitations that places there. The subject parcel is within the settlement community land uses, and then the development guidelines for this area is largely predicated upon the successful aggregation of multiple parcels. That's kind of the intent, but the end goal would be to reduce dependency on Highway 17, and so these commercial parcels would use those secondary roads for access. The AB designation would provide this parcel more inclusive uses. So you think about office professional, it's just that you can do any type of, you know, tax office, medical office, anything like that. AB would open it up, but you would still be bound to that 500 feet and certain restrictions within the overlay. So that's all I have before you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Do we have any questions from the committee, Mr. Chapman?
Yes, ma'am. We had somebody speak during citizen participation or public comment, wanting to know if we have any idea of what might be going here. And also, if we're still, another person spoke about the 500 feet requirement. So I think I see that the 500 feet requirement still is in play as it is presently presented. But do we have any idea what could be going here? I know that across McKnight is a church.
Right.
So, you know, we have to be a little bit concerned about what goes there next to that church. But the church is owned AB, is that correct?
Directly across the street.
Across McKnight Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's OP if you see up there.
It shows on here AB.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's AB. OP would be, I think, the old Carrabba's in that area.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they intend to do. Sort of suspect there may be a longer term, sort of see how this comes in. If it goes AB, I know we've had some interest in the larger parcel surrounding this one. So it may be kind of a gauge to see if the smaller parcel can go AB, perhaps the larger one could annex in at a later date. That's sort of my guess. But I'm not aware of any plans for this lot.
I have one other question. All along 17, pretty much up to Hamlin Road there are sweet basket stands. So those sweet basket stands, by requiring the 500-foot buffer would still be available there?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Any other, Ms. Hyatt?
And I assume the larger lot behind it is office professional? What is that zone now? Secondary?
No, it's just the larger with the hatched behind there. It's in the county.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what it's zoned in the county. It's probably similar to our community conservation as well.
I feel comfortable that the Planning Commission approved because of the overlay. We're still standing on the 500, so I would move to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve. Do you have a second?
I'll second for discussion.
Okay. Do we have any discussion?
Well, I'm concerned that we don't know all the details. And by not knowing all the details, I don't know that I want to just automatically do 1 acre just to see what happens. I would like to have a more combined application, if you will, rather than just one small acre that might lead to something we don't want. So I seconded for discussion, but my eventual vote is going to be no.
Ms. Corley?
Is that possible ever to really hold something until the next one comes in? You know what I mean? Is that something that...
Oh, we could defer this. But I mean, I think that whoever is doing this, if that is the plan, is to see what the outcome of this is before they move forward. But I'm tending to agree with Mr. Chapman. I feel like AB zoning is more aggressive. And while this is Highway 17 and remains under the Sweetgrass Basket overlay, you know, once you change the zoning, there's no going back. And it's unclear to me what could go there that, you know, even with the 500 feet and if something much larger goes in there, you know, is that, I feel like I would want to understand a little bit more before.
And it would give them time to speak to the community, you know? I feel like it would give them time to talk to them and give them more information.
So do we want to vote on this motion? Do you want to withdraw the motion or?
Withdraw the motion.
Do you withdraw your second?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so we have we don't have a motion on the table. Do we want to, does anyone want to move to defer this to next month?
Yeah, move to defer.
Second.
All right, we have a motion to defer and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion carries.
Good talk.
And let me just say, I'm sure the Planning Commission had some reason to do what they what they did at their meeting, but I don't think we went far enough. So what we've done by deferring is just try to find out some more information on what the potential is and what they were working on.
Yeah, that's good talk.
All right, moving on to item 6B.
Okay, 6B and 6C kind of go together, but again, I'll present it and then you can vote separately. This is a request on Joe Rouse Road, between Joe Rouse and Julius Robertson. It's an additional almost 10-acre tract of land, so you can see it there. It's adjacent to the other two parcels that were under old business. The proposal is to annex this into the town and also zone it under the Dunes West PD ordinance. And I'm happy to answer questions on that, or I can continue with the amendment portion.
All right. On the annexation, do we have a motion?
So this is tied to the other two pieces?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Move to deny.
We have a motion to deny. Do we have a second?
Second.
So this is on the annexation.
Right.
All right.
Oh.
Those in favor of the motion to deny, say aye.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
If we have any knowledge, the email for the applicant is to Prissy Thomas. The applicant owner is Nancy Lynn Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Are either of these two people, have they been residents of the area for a while? Or do we know?
I think the Martin family, who owns all three parcels, different family members of the Martin family own these parcels. I think they've owned them for quite some time. But they all signed the property owner affidavit for the annexation forms. So, but I've not personally spoke with them. The applicant has been doing all of the applications and all the communications with staff.
Okay. I'm ready for the motion.
All right. Ms. Hyatt?
I was just going to say the other we heard separately, and this is together, annex and...
But we're taking them separately.
You are going to?
Yes.
Okay.
We're taking them separately.
Again, I feel the same way as last.
All right. So we have a motion to deny the annexation. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. So again, a 2-2 on the annexation.
Okay, that was also Ms. Cornley opposed?
Oh, Ms. Whitley and Ms. Hyatt.
Thank you.
The next part is the zoning. They want to rezone to that Dunes West PDR3. Do we have a motion on that?
Move to deny.
Second.
We have a motion to deny and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion to deny?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Item number 7 on the agenda. This is exciting. This is a presentation of the draft Shem Creek Zoning District. We had a committee that put together that worked hard for a year on putting together a plan, and so now we have moving forward on that plan. So,
thank you. Yeah, it is exciting, and I'll say a couple words, and then I'm going to turn it over to Tyson Smith, who's been working really hard on this. But as you mentioned, there's been a lot of work on this in the past. I know there was a group that worked on a plan in 2002, I think 2017, there was work on it. But more recently, the town council appointed a study advisory committee, and out of that process came the Shem Creek Area Management Plan, and that was put out in July of 2019. The emphasis on that plan was preserving Shem Creek as a working commercial creek while maintaining compatibility with the adjoining residential neighborhoods. And obviously the plan looked at everything. It looked at the cultural aspects, the working aspects, design and everything. But out of that came, it addressed land uses, setbacks, building and density requirements, design and architectural standards, parking, public access. So all of the things that are addressed through a zoning code. So the draft Shem Creek Zoning District is a direct result from that area management plan. It's also mentioned in our recently adopted comprehensive plan. And then in 2020, Tyson and his group did a zoning code audit. So they looked at all of our zoning code and talked about, based on the new comp plan and this management plan, what are some things that needed to be rewritten. And this was prioritized out of all that. And so they've been working very hard on that. And just to kind of give you an idea of where we are at right now, our current Shem Creek Waterfront Overlay District is very short. It's about 3 sentences. And all it does, and that's been in place for quite some time. And really all it does is permit uses based on the marine district. It talks about prohibiting jet skis, and then it says your parking may be constructed of pervious material, and that's it. So right now our current zoning ordinance does not provide any extra protections or lay out different standards for the Shem Creek zoning district. So this what Tyson's going to talk about in this draft really takes from the area management plan what that group worked really hard on and puts these in a manner that can be codified by council and really really address those things that affect the creek. And so I will turn it over to Tyson Smith.
Good. Thank you, Michelle. Good morning, everyone. Nice to be with you again. As Michelle said, the last time we were together was during the assessment presentation last August. So good to be with you again. I will move past that slide since Michelle covered it so well. Well, today's an opportunity to introduce the base zoning districts that we've drafted. I want to, this of course is one of the first conversation of many that we'll be having between now and probably October if we're estimating this right. So I'll go over this at a relatively high level today, but I do want to dig into a few things that I would guess would be at the top of everyone's mind as we start taking this on again. If there's anything that I don't touch on today that you want to make sure the next time we meet that I do, just let me know that, and I'm happy to. One thing I wanted to point out is that I've drafted these code sections right now to just all be together and dead so that you can review everything in one place. When this is actually codified, different pieces might go to different parts of the code, but I just thought that would make it harder to review. So just note that. There are a number of footnotes in the document that help us keep track of the reasoning as we're going through these drafts with staff. And by the way, that reminds me, we've been working with staff, I guess, on a draft of this since early April, I guess, something like that, and going back and forth. So staff has been through this a number of times, as have we, of course. The objectives in general are, as Michelle said, to preserve the character of the creek and the history of the creek, but to respect existing land uses. The way I would put it informally is that we're trying to keep Shem Creek the same, but just more so. That's not true in every case, but that's sort of our starting point. And we've tried to draft the regulations so that we are avoiding major nonconformities in this area. The plan that was completed in 2019 does include some non-zoning aspects. So there are a number of zoning things that we've tried to implement here, but there are some non-zoning things like shuttles and other parking master plans, et cetera, that we wouldn't address through zoning. So just making that point. Also, the plan basically breaks down the creek into three different areas. You would say in the middle, you've got the restaurants and the commercial areas. Heading towards the harbor, you've got the working waterfront largely. And then heading back across Coleman Boulevard Bridge, you've got offices and natural area. And that's referred to throughout the plan as the natural area because of the remaining and more extensive marshlands that are over there on waterward of those land uses. Just so everyone knows, the plan that we're implementing is posted on the website. By going to the website and going through these click-throughs here, you can get to the plan to refresh your memories there. In almost every case, the plan was our starting point. There were a few places where we thought, we want to make sure council wants this. So we've made a few deviations, and I'll touch on those as we go along. Obviously, we can stick as close or as we want to the plan in these areas. The plan recommended three different districts, as I said. We named them. The names are open to input as well. But this is how they would present. In the upper left-hand corner, we have existing zoning overlaid with these new base zoning districts. So these districts we're going to talk about today would replace underlying zoning. What we've tried to do is take what was in underlying zoning, which is largely maritime and also or marine district and also light industrial, also the business district. So Shem Creek has been challenging, I think, in part because we've been trying to fit into a very unique area, the same zoning districts we use throughout the town. So what we've tried to do here is make these districts specific to Shem Creek. So we've got these three base zoning districts, and we'll look at each of these a little more closely in a moment. There are a number of general provisions. For example, we had to revise some definitions and add some definitions. Personal watercraft has not been defined up to this point, so that was important to define. Water dependent and water related was important because there's some land uses that you would have throughout the community, say for example, education, or like a technical school type of thing, but we want to make sure those are allowed in the creek area only if they're water dependent or water related, and we can talk more about that. So you'll have some changed definitions. There are also some new conditional use provisions. The first is the parking lot. There are a number of them, but these are some examples. Parking lots is a 10% cap on the impervious surface that can be in a parking area. Michelle alluded to this earlier. This is really changing may to shall, so to speak. It allows the current zoning overlay allows impervious surfaces. This would require them largely. And if you drive through the Shem Creek area, you know that most of that is gravel or oyster shell or something like that. We had to make some revisions to the definitions of boat launches and docks, not because we changed a whole lot there in terms of what people, the existing uses, but the definitions just needed some more specificity there. And I'll go over that as we go through. Any sections of the ordinance that I haven't presented you with a change for, you can assume are staying as they are. That's the assumption, and I'll go through a couple of those that are notable. For each district, there's a purposes and a finding section, and then a list of land uses that are permitted. We've broken those uses down, as you're used to, by right, conditional use, special exception uses, and accessory uses. And some accessory uses are only allowed by conditional use processes. So you can see, I've just posted the one from the working district here, just as an example. That's how those are broken down. The way we arrived at this is we went through the existing land use table for the town and consulted the plan, looked at existing uses, and tried to fit the right uses into the right place. We looked at two major things. One is the use compatible in this district? Is it what this area management plan seemed to call for? And also, is including this use going to prohibit one of the most important uses in that district? So the example there would be, for example, you've got working districts where we want to protect the ability for commercial fishing, traditional waterfront uses to perpetuate. So while something else might be okay there, you may not want to have competition for those types of uses so that they remain in place there. So more on that as we go along. And by the way, I've got at the end of this presentation the list of uses for every district. So if we want to skip to that during Q&A, we can do that as well. So if you break out the three districts, this is what they would look like. If we look first at the working district, this one's slightly different from what's in the plan. And let me tell you what our thinking is on that. The working district, I think, is self-explanatory, out near the mouth of the creek, near the harbor. In the plan, there was a small area between the next purple area, which I'll get to in a second, that covered the waterfront areas of those really residential lots. And when we started applying zoning there, it became very complicated and I think confusing for property owners. So we just proposed taking that little line out. Then that would leave what's now a property that's what's now zoned light industrial, and that would be included just as it is in the plan. And then as we looked at, if you go all the way over to the that piece, that parcel near the boat ramp, by the way, is not in the district itself, but that's a dry dock storage area. Those uses really are consistent more with working types of commercial water-based uses. So we proposed designating that as a working area instead of a natural area. The natural area, we'll just go down to the bottom since we're talking about that, is there in the bluish green area. That is going to be your restaurants, office uses, obviously. Still allows kayak and excursion rentals like it has there today with coastal excursions there. But given that it had those office uses and restaurant uses continuing to be allowed, that's one reason we didn't include that dry dock area, not bringing those and uses down there. And then finally, the area in the middle, the restaurants and the hotel there would be the hospitality district. As I said, in each of these cases, the land uses are, we believe, captures those who are there today. They don't make anyone, we don't believe, non-conforming. A notable one to think about is the restaurant down in the westernmost or southernmost area of the working district, down at the mouth of the creek. That has a restaurant that exists there. We left restaurants as an allowed but special exception use there. We kind of went back and forth on that. Doing that, of course, makes any of those properties available for restaurant use. Not doing that, of course, would make the existing restaurant non-conforming. So it's a balance. But the way we've done it now, it's a special exception. So if a new restaurant were proposed in the working district, it could go in, but it would be subject to the special exception process. Design review. These are our attempt to codify the recommendations in the plan related to the architectural features that are appropriate in Shem Creek. The plan, here's another slight deviation from the plan on its face. The plan recommended that the natural, I'll go back here, that the natural and the hospitality districts be in the town's overlay for design review. But not to include it in the working waterfront. That makes sense at a level. I see that we don't want as much interference there. Those are commercial ship fishing uses and design may not be appropriate there. But we weren't sure that's how the council was going to feel. So we've included all the districts in the community commercial design review overlay for now in this draft. So that's something we want feedback from you all and eventually the commission and the council on as well. The little excerpt there to your right is from the plan. You can see there that we've represented, that red line roughly represents the average height along the south and north side of Shem Creek there in that hospitality district. And that is basically what the design standards would perpetuate. It allows a height, which we'll get to here in a second, allows a height standard that reflects sort of a compromise between what's currently allowed and what's currently built. What's currently built is a little higher than what's allowed, so we'll get to that in a moment. The other thing under design review that I want to talk about this morning is surface parking and the regulations related to that. A parking design plan would be required for any new use in the districts. I mentioned the 10% or less impervious surface requirement, but I wanted to touch on another one. This is one of those areas where we saw it in the plan, but we wanted to make sure you wanted to do it before we made it final. I think there was a sense, and rightly so, that there's not enough parking in this area, that maybe these uses demand more per square foot than we're requiring. So the plan recommended increasing the requirements for certain land uses so there would be more parking there. But since that has sort of a trickle-through effect, we wanted to talk to you about it. So for example, if you look at restaurants, and I wanted to make sure that it was clear that you, this is the way it was written in the plan, but bars and nightclubs and lounges are not allowed in any of the districts, but this land use is in the plan. So restaurants, for example, currently they could have a minimum of one space per 100 square feet. The plan recommended that the minimum be 1.25. So that's going to require more of a new restaurant or new restaurant area if it were built. That's the way it's drafted now. We've put that into every district, but wanted to make sure that was the area where the council ultimately would be comfortable.
Yeah, Mr. Chapman, go ahead.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
And this may or may not be germane to what you're talking about, but it's certainly associated. Recently, there has been implemented a program where parking is assigned by telephone going into restaurants. This is somewhat germane to the number of spaces per unit, but not. This program that's recently been implemented is on both sides of Coleman Boulevard, and it has created some distaste, if you will, for Shem Creek. And it's a program that not everybody can use, meaning that no longer can everybody go to Shem Creek to enjoy the benefits. Is that something we can talk about with this plan?
Well, we've talked about it a lot, and the pay for parking is certainly, I think it started on the one side, and over the weekend or the last couple weekends, you can see where those restaurants and uses that did not have signs pay for parking are now being forced to do it, essentially, because patrons are now using their parking spots. And this is a conversation we've had, and we probably need to continue to have legal weigh in, because it's really weighing your required zoning. You know, every use is required to have a certain amount of parking. So if your required parking is, if they're charging for that versus extra parking. And so I know we've had this come up in Patriots Point and other areas, certainly throughout the town. But the thing we looked at when we first started getting these calls was, are these signs in our right-of-way? And they did not appear to be in the right-of-way. I think whether or not a business can charge for parking when it's required parking per the town zoning ordinance, I think that's probably something that legal would have to address. And I do think it becomes a bigger issue with this zoning, and it, you know, we're going to continue to talk about it, and we don't have all the answers, and that's why we wanted to have this discussion today, because we knew that we needed some input as we have our workshops and talk through this process. But we are well aware of that, Mr. Chapman, and we're having those discussions right now, so.
Can I add?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead. I would just say that by charging for the parking and setting it up the way they do, mm-hmm. it basically eliminates the parking for their patrons, because you're not required to prove that you're patronizing their restaurant. You just have to be willing to pay. Correct. They give it to you free if you come in, but you can be willing to pay the $20 to park and go somewhere else. So I feel like it is something we really do need to talk about, because they technically aren't providing the right spaces for the people that are going to the restaurant the way it's set up now.
Correct.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I feel like once the parking costs get so high, people are pushed out into the neighborhoods, parking in residential neighborhoods, which I think is one of the problems that we're facing with the Shem Creek area, is people parking in residential neighborhoods. And I've heard stories of, you know, golf carts ferrying people from the neighborhoods to Shem Creek, and, you know, that's not really, for the people that live in that area, not really positive for them. So would that be something that could we formally ask for legal to explore, whether or not, if it's a required parking space, whether or not charging for that changes the dynamic?
Yes, ma'am, we appreciate that. We're aware of that situation. It is already underway, that review. And just for context, this is something that we dealt with, not specifically at Shem Creek, but at least the theory of paid parking for years. So we'll be able to provide this committee and the council with an opinion on that issue.
Great, thank you so much.
And I also want to bring in the elephant in the room, which is office building garage, which has the garage has parking, is, and I'm having trouble reading your maps. Normally I don't have trouble reading maps, but is the office building garage included in whatever we're doing with this plan?
It's not. So I'll, for those who can see, do I have a pointer on here? Okay, that's it right there, isn't it?
They can't see the pointer.
Oh, yeah, they can't see it.
Yeah.
You can circle it on the screen there.
That's what I've heard. Let's see. Whoa. Okay, that's it, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that would be Nico's to the eastern side of my circle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not included in here. The way that parking as a use, as a principal use is addressed, is that surface parking as a principal use is allowed. Structured parking in the districts are not allowed.
Okay. Well, my concern is that we have a parking facility that some point in the future people might want to consider as part of the district, and do something about the availability of parking for the area for free, like it was originally intended. And so to exclude it completely, I think is not something we want to do. And I say that because what happens if that goes away at some point? What do we do then? If it's not part of the district, do we allow it to come back or do we not? And so I would like to at least include it, even if it's a non-conforming use. Because it technically was built to be part of the district, to have parking availability.
Ms. Corley?
Can you remind me what the reason was?
Ms. Corley?
Oh, sorry. Can you remind me why they left it off?
I can't remember.
Hmm.
We left it off because it was left off in the plan. So I don't know why it was left off in the plan. It certainly is oriented toward the district, but
I don't know why.
Yeah, a lot of the uses, I guess it is distinct from the types of uses that it sounds like the town wants to encourage.
Gotcha.
Which may explain it. But I think Mr. Chapman's making a good point. When we have this discussion about paid parking, we have to talk about that. And if including it in the boundary is where the council wants to go, that's fine as well. But no doubt it is part of the discussion.
I mean, you can always include it as a non-conforming use.
Right.
And I just think it needs to be part of the discussion.
I agree.
I don't know what the answer is,
Gary.
But it needs to be part of the discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chapman.
Any other input along those lines?
I'm sorry for prolonging the meeting.
No, that's a really good point.
That's why we're here. Does this circle go away? How do we get this? Gotcha. Thank you. Okie doke. Okay, so back to this question on the plan recommendation that increased parking requirements apply within Shem Creek. I'm seeing a couple nods. We'll leave that for now in the draft, and as long as no one's objecting. Let's talk about setbacks. We have, again, tried to make these consistent with what the plan requires or what's already required today. We're also cognizant of literally what's on the ground today, and we're also cognizant of the expectations that go with that. So in balancing all of those things, I'll try to explain what we've come up with. And again, this really just codifies what's in the plan. There's a minimum setback of 10 to 15 feet from the property line or the critical line, okay? And you have to have a minimum of one of those, 10 feet from the critical line or 15 feet from the property line. And that in this graphic is right there. And that graphic is it's from the property, it's from the critical line. Now that's an area in which this is presumably the property owner's property or some portion of it is. So what would they be allowed to do in that setback, which might not only be allowed around the town and other places? They can have pedestrian paths, they can have outdoor dining, they can have balconies, steps, open shade structures, they can provide structures that are required to provide access to the second story or to an adjacent property. And we just point this out because some of these things wouldn't be allowed in your normal setbacks, but given the way Shem Creek is, they're proposed to be allowed here. What wouldn't be allowed would be retail or outdoor displays or really anything else that's not facilitating interconnectivity. We knew we couldn't think of everything that might come up along those lines, but being able to walk along the creek is obviously one of the most important objectives for the character of the area. And then the next piece here, and then I'll briefly stop if there are questions, is what about a maximum setback? So the idea here is on the creek, generally speaking, we want people building or rebuilding very close up. We want a sense of that place that creates. So there's an additional maximum setback of 15 feet from your other setback, wherever it ends up. So 15 feet, I don't know, might be the space here to here, is be the most that a property owner could back up from their minimum setback. So that's how that would work. Any questions there? Okay. Let's go back to height. I referenced this a bit earlier. Right now, currently, I thought that's a good starting point. The maximum height in most areas of the creek is 40 feet. It's a 35 general town max plus 5 feet because they're in the flood zone. But there's a small portion of the Shem Creek properties that's currently in the Boulevard Overlay District. That is shown here, Walt Mullen Circle. That portion today is 45 feet and is being proposed to stay 45 feet. Just a reminder, we measure and we continue to measure from the top of the structure to the base at grade of that structure. And also a point that comes up frequently is that rooftop dining has to be below the maximum height. So that's not in addition to. Now in the plan, it was recommended that the hospitality district, and I'll go to a slide here that'll call all this out graphically, but the hospitality and natural districts go to 45 feet instead of 40 feet. But the facade is limited to 25 feet. So at 25 feet from grade, you'd have to start your roof. So that would diminish the massing sense that way. In the working districts, The plan says base it on underlying zoning, and that's the marine and light industrial district, so that was, that's at 40 feet now, it would stay at 40 feet, so there's no change proposed there. So it would lay out this way. Throughout the district, the maximum facade is 25 feet. However, let's take the purple lines first, that's your working district, your working district is currently 40, would stay 40. In the green, that's your hospitality district, is currently 40, it would go to 45, and then in natural, it's 40 or 45, and that would go to 45 throughout. Now, this increases allowable height in these areas, but my sense from what's in your plan is that it actually decreases by a few feet the average height that's there today. So this doesn't increase what people see, but it increases what's allowed. I think that was that accommodation I referenced earlier in my talk, is that, you know, I think we're looking at heights that are more like 10 feet above allowed now. So I think this was an effort to meet them halfway, so to speak. But anyway, like everything, that's open to discussion, but that's how we propose handling height. What's not changing, again, I made these points in this document just so everybody's cognizant of it. Vegetation requirements are not changing. Tree protection requirements, as they apply elsewhere, will continue to apply. Your non-conforming uses and structures provisions that were just adopted in March would apply here per normal. And your flood damage and prevention ordinance, and I believe it was updated in February, that applies here as normal as well. We didn't change anything as to these four areas. Where we're planning to go from here, if this is acceptable, would be to make ourselves available on August 2nd with the committee. Again, if you want to take this up again in discussion format, but then to go to the Planning Commission on August 18th, back to you on September 7th for an official recommendation, and then Town Council in September and October for first and second reading. That would be the plan anyway. So, finally, if you do have questions, you may ask them now, but if you have questions after today, Liz Boyles is our contact on staff, and you can direct them to her, and she'll make sure they get to us.
Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, I would like to see us change the schedule so we can, we being the committee, can hear from the Planning Commission first. Because it will help us, I think, maybe look at some things we didn't think of. And I don't know what the other two members that are here now think.
Well, we do have it coming. You mean have the commission hear it before the public hearing? Or what? Because it'll come back to us in September.
If we did the Planning Commission and public hearing, I see. The problem is Planning Commission meets the third Wednesday.
Right.
That's what the issue is. Okay.
And we do have built in where we could have a special meeting, and we've talked about that. The timing of committee versus this can't go to the July commission.
Okay.
We've missed that, and I don't think it would go for the public hearing anyway. Perhaps we could have a special meeting where we have a discussion, sort of a workshop, prior to your August 2nd, and then we take it back for public hearing in August. I think that's something that we could do for sure.
I missed that. That's the only reason I was trying to get that ahead of us seeing it the next time.
Yeah. No, that's fine, because this is an aggressive schedule. We have some extra time built in to have that workshop. Okay.
Well, so perhaps after the Planning Commission meets, because mm-hmm. I think that Mr. Chapman's point of hearing additional ideas from our commission would be useful. So maybe after August 18th, we could potentially have a special Planning Committee meeting to go deeper into this.
Okay.
My question is, when I was looking over what we had ahead of the meeting, in hospitality, are we allowing accommodations? I know there's already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wouldn't want us to have any more accommodations than we already have in that area. Do you think hotels in that area are a good idea?
It's written out.
We already have one, which maybe we could just make non-conforming, but I'd hate to see another one built.
The biggest problem is parking.
Yeah, I just, I mean, don't like the idea of more...
You don't have enough parking now. Where are you going to put the parking if it's not elevated?
Yeah.
Underneath?
Yeah, well, they have the Shim Creek Inn there, you know, but, which I assume is the reason that was, maybe was included, but I just wouldn't want to see any more, you know, a hotel to come up there, like, next to our park, in that huge parking lot. So, I mean, does anyone else think accommodations is a good idea in the area?
Well, I think that anything new would actually not be able to meet the parking requirement. Is that...
Well, I just would rather not chance it. That's just my opinion. I think it's just not appropriate place for accommodations.
There is a space right across the street that could be switched from the office building, which was a bank, with the lot that is now being charged for parking. It would be big enough for a small hotel.
A boutique type. Yeah, I just, I'm not keen on the idea of accommodations in that area.
Yeah.
I mean,
So that wouldn't necessarily...
I think it would be difficult...
Right. And it would...
To put any kind of lodging there, but not impossible.
Not impossible, yes. I don't know how we would go about passing that on, but...
Well, I guess...
It's my opinion, you know, that's the one thing that sticks out to me.
You want to change that before the next draft, or...
We can do that. And I, like you said, it was a matter of trying to make sure what's existing is not non-conforming.
Right.
One thing Tyson and I were just talking about is there are variances that can be granted from the parking standards. So that's something that BOZA could grant relief from, even if there's not adequate parking. Mm-hmm. That's just something
that's
to keep
right.
in mind.
That's a concern. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's certainly something that can be removed. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you. Is there anything further, any further questions that at the moment? All right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Tyson, for your presentation. That concludes item number 7 on the agenda. Our last thing is to adjourn. So this meeting is adjourned. Mm-hmm.